He was a fixture at Hayward this past weekend. Catch up with all he had to report in the Register Guard. Try RegisterGuard.com. Use the handle at AustinMeekRG to follow him on Twitter. Austin Meek, a good Tuesday to you. How's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
All is well. Game 5 last night, NBA Finals in Oakland. Warriors could have closed it out. They didn't. No Draymond Green, a bunch of Kyrie Irving and LeBron. Starting with the suspension, there were many schools of thought. Dude has to realize he's wearing a target. Some felt at this juncture, let him play. So you thought the ruling over the top, or do you have to say, look, track record-wise, he was asking for it?
Yeah, I thought Draymond Green had it coming. There had just been an accumulation of events over the course of the playoffs that even if the trigger event itself maybe seemed pretty tame, there was enough of a history with that guy that I think he did deserve to be suspended. I mean, look, you get a guy in the cojones once, you can say it's an accident. If it happens twice, maybe it's a trend. Any more than that, I think you're asking to be labeled a dirty player, and I think Draymond Green has earned that reputation. And look, the Warriors obviously missed him. I didn't think they were the same team last night without him.
Yeah, I thought it was odd. Most of the national narrative, I listened to some ESPN radio yesterday and then the stuff we play here, and signing off, Gottlieb said you'll be surprised how much they miss them. Wasn't it kind of odd that people were being dismissive? On one hand, if he's so valuable and such a Swiss Army knife and makes all these contributions, it was arguably the MVP heading into last night. How could you possibly say his absence wouldn't have an impact?
Yeah. You know, I think we've kind of gotten this series all wrong. People talk about the big three in Cleveland being LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love. But it's not the big three in Cleveland, because Kevin Love's been a no-show in this series. It's LeBron and Kyrie. And with Golden State, it's not just the Splash Brothers. It's not just Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. It's also Draymond Green. He's a big part of that. I think he's the guy that gives the Warriors their edge, you know. And I'm not a huge fan of the way the guy plays, but if you look at great championship teams of the past, the Bulls had Rodman, the Pistons had Bill Laimbeer. Sometimes you need that guy who is willing to get out there and play the role of enforcer. That's what he brings to the Warriors. That's why he's so valuable.
And by the way, let's not forget the Pistons also had Rodman. Just in case Laimbeer was having a civilized night. LeBron goes, I've never seen a guy evaluated like this. He's one of the best players ever. Then he's overrated. He's entitled. He's self-important. Then last night he was just insane. Just the performance last night with the season hanging in the balance, it's not something you see every day.
Yeah, at this stage of his career, I don't get the people who dislike LeBron James. It's hard for me to root against LeBron at this stage of his career. You know, when he was younger, did he have some missteps? The decision, was that a bad call? It probably was. But at this stage, to me, LeBron is a guy who, in the twilight of his career, is still, you know, one of the best players in the NBA. And I think we've had this discussion, you know, about how you get to a certain stage of your career where maybe you can't bring it every night the way you could when you were in your prime. LeBron's still really good, and, you know, last night he was as good as he's ever been. That, no matter how you slice it, that was one of the top three or four postseason games for LeBron James in his career. And he's going to have to do that two more times, I think, if Cleveland's going to have a chance to win this series.
Oh, yeah, he was just a force, and he can't find the off switch now. I want to get to track and field as we continue with Austin Meek. So let's go to Saturday. Ducks didn't win a national team championship, but with that powerhouse roster, I want to get to the performance of the redshirt freshman from Signal Hill, Ariana Washington. Like you wrote, did we witness one of those A Star Is Born moments?
I think we did. That was pretty impressive to watch on Saturday. Even though Oregon didn't win the team title, they were just, from start to finish, they were incredible on Saturday. And Arianna Washington was a big part of that. To win the 100 and the 200 as a freshman, that's not something that's been done very many times in the history of track and field. So really impressive performance for her. Really impressive performance across the board for the Oregon women. They had a bad day on Thursday. A lot of things went wrong that put them in a position where it was going to be a big uphill battle for them to win the title. They basically had to be perfect. They also had to get some help from Arkansas, and they almost pulled it off. They were pretty close to perfect. It's just Arkansas didn't give them any room. You know, Arkansas kept the foot on the pedal, but still pretty incredible thing to watch on Saturday across the board for the Oregon women.
Yeah, I wanted to get back because we always hear about Hayward magic. And, of course, in recent years, I should almost say the recent decade, I mean, it seems like the sun always shines. But you mentioned what happened on Thursday. And for those of us who weren't there, whether it was the reaction of the coach, I mean, what were some of the specifics that led to such a rough day?
Yeah, you know, it's been kind of a weird season for the Oregon women. It just seemed like they were always dealing with something. You know, they had Jasmine Todd leave the team very abruptly during the regional meet, and there was never really any explanation of what was going on there. And then Thursday, on the first day of the NCAA meet, Hannah Cunliffe, their big sprinting star, pulls up lame running the 100, which was a huge loss for them. She was favored to win that event, and there'd been some speculation that maybe she was hurt because she didn't qualify in the 200. So just a lot of stuff swirling around that team. And then the coach, Robert Johnson, had been, I guess it's fair to say, not been too happy with some of the media coverage, some of the things being written about the team. So all that stuff kind of came to a head on Thursday. And the backdrop was really the national championship slipping away from them on day one. And that's, you know, that's ultimately how it came down, because they had a great day on Saturday. They did everything they possibly could. But because of Hannah Cunliffe's injury, because they couldn't get the baton round in the 4x4 prelims, those things ultimately came back to haunt them a little bit on Saturday.
And, of course, as we know historically, no element of the media more cutthroat than those who cover track and field.
Yeah, we are a pretty intimidating crew, I'll tell you that.
Shaking in my boots. One of the recent questions surrounded the sudden vulnerability of Edward Cheserek, who's usually invincible. And it might sound condescending. I like what you wrote. He earlier this year lost to a guy from Lewis and Clark. But big race on Wednesday, then Friday, the 5,000. What kind of performance was that, and how close is he to being, I guess, 100% physically as we move towards Rio?
Yeah, well, hey, nothing against the pioneers. If there's any Lewis and Clark grads in the listening audience, save me the emails. I have great respect for your fine university.
Okay. You're covered.
Yeah. Yeah, Edward Cheserek, you know, weird start of the season for him. He lost his first two races at Hayward Field this year, lost to a guy from Washington, lost to a guy from Lewis and Clark, acknowledged that he was dealing with an injury early in the season. So people just weren't sure what to expect from him at the NCAAs. The times later in the season suggested that he was getting back on track, but I think there was some thought that maybe he was going to be vulnerable and that somebody could beat him in one of those races. But he was his old self this last weekend. You know, he came out, he won the 10,000 pretty easily. And then 2 days later, you know, you thought maybe that's when it would catch up with him. If he hadn't had his normal training, if that injury was flaring up or anything, but came out on Friday and won that race as well, pretty comfortably. So, you know, that was vintage Edward Cheserek. He's still the guy to beat, and he was, you know, unbeatable at this level last weekend for sure.
Devin Allen, just an explosion in the 110, comfortably crushed the field, won it 2 years ago, obviously was hurt last year. Your piece was more all-encompassing. With this win, it's kind of more of a setup. So how much more difficult will the competition be for him moving forward as he tries to, you know, make Team USA and travel to Rio?
It's going to be tougher, obviously, but keep in mind he won the USA hurdles title 2 years ago when he was a freshman. So it's, you know, I don't think there's anybody in the field that should scare him. You know, obviously, in an Olympic year, everybody's on point, everybody's peaking. So it's going to be stiff competition for Devin at the trials. He's probably going to have to run a cleaner race than he ran at the NCAAs. You know, he ran 13:50, and he clipped a few hurdles, which has been a thing that, you know, he's been working on, is trying to get a little bit cleaner and not clip the hurdles. I think he can get there, but you know, he's got to really lock in the next 2 or 3 weeks, iron out any little things with his form, and be ready to go. And if he is, I think he's got a great chance to get to Rio.
Final thought, where does football fit in for Devin Allen?
Well, that's a great question. I think at some point, Devin Allen's going to have a tough choice to make. And that point may not be now. It may not be this summer. But somewhere down the road, I think he's going to have to choose. Is he going to go all in with track, or is he going to stay with football? Because, you know, the toll that football takes on your body, if you're playing football, you're kind of all in with football by default.
Right.
As he found out when he got injured and had to miss an entire season. So my thought is this summer could have a big impact on what Devin Allen decides to do going forward, because I think right now he's very set on the idea that he is a football player. He loves football. He's going to come back in the fall and play football. And this is my opinion. It's not something he said, but my sense of it is, you know, the only thing that could change that is if he just completely blows up this summer, goes to Rio, maybe wins a medal at Rio. That could just open up a lot of doors for him in the track world that he hasn't had a chance to explore yet. And, you know, as a football player last year, he was kind of just a guy, you know.
Right.
He was still getting healthy. He caught 9 passes, I think. So it's not like he was playing like a first-round draft pick. So at some point he's going to have to ask, you know, where's my future? Is it playing football? Am I going to play in the NFL? Or would I be better served to protect my body and focus all my energy on being a hurdler? Because he has the potential to be world-class in the hurdles and have a great pro career there. So at some point, the choice he's going to have to make, but he's still young. He's only 21. He's got a lot of years in front of him, so he has some time to make that decision.
Yeah, I'm going to be very curious to keep an eye on which path he takes. Hey, great stuff as always, Austin. Follow him on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Obviously, you can catch his work in the Register Guard. Always appreciate you getting us rolling on a Tuesday, sir. Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you next week.
All right. Take it easy.